something to run, he pleaded. Eisner said he wasn't ready. Ovitz was still a dealmaker, not an operator, though Ovitz could never get Eisner to clarify what he meant by that. Eisner lectured him again on the higher ethical standards of a public company. Ovitz complained about John Dreyer, head of PR, and his wife Jody, who was Eisner's assistant, who he felt were trying to undermine him. Just fire them, Eisner replied. How? Ovitz asked. They don't report to me. By the end of the dinner, Ovitz felt he'd gotten nowhere. I wish you'd listen to me when I talk, Ovitz said. In June, Ovitz put his mounting grievances and frustration into a handwritten 7-page letter. For me, it's just not right, he said of his position at Disney. I really have nothing to do. I am fighting with the outside world. I have no real authority to do anything. You really do not need me. You need someone who can be happy running Point, but not looking to grow. My services and talents are lost in this setup. I can think of a lot of people who could help you more than me. Eisner was inclined to agree, but other parts of the letter infuriated him. Ovitz had mocked the idea of calling the executive offices the Team Disney building. You're a team destroyer, not a team builder, he wrote. I've had enough trouble inheriting your fights and enemies. Every day someone complains to me about something. It's okay because it is human and healthy. I've always had one goal, which is to protect you, the company, and our relationship. Maybe you cannot have a partner. You have failed with everyone over the years. You hated Diller. You constantly complained about him even when you went to Disney. You couldn't stand Frank Wells or his work habits for the first 5 years, and told Judy and me how hard it was. We can talk about this, and should, but nonetheless I do have some feelings that have been knocked, stamped, and jumped on. I do not give up, but let's respect each other's feelings. Eisner stormed into Ovitz's office, brandishing the letter, one of the few times he ever came to Ovitz's office, instead of summoning Ovitz to his. I never badmouthed Frank Wells, never, and I never badmouthed Barry Diller, he said, his voice rising. Sit down and listen to yourself, Ovitz replied. You know that is a goddamned lie. You can't rewrite history. Ovitz thought of all the times he and Judy and Jane had listened to Eisner rant about Wells and Diller. Do you want me to put you on the phone to my wife and Jane to prove it? No, no, Eisner backed down. But we need to talk this out. The letter is how I feel, Ovitz said. Read it again after you calm down. Then we can discuss it. They did discuss it, ad nauseam, as Ovitz later recalled. But Ovitz wouldn't retract any of it. The more they talked, the angrier Eisner seemed to get. Still, Eisner spoke warmly of Ovitz and his family at Ovitz's daughter's bat mitzvah in July. Afterward, Ovitz rented the House of Blues restaurant in Hollywood for his daughter's party. He was a friend of actor Dan Aykroyd, who was a part owner of the chain. Afterward, Eisner called Ovitz in and demanded to know whether he'd paid for the event or gotten it for free. Litvak had brought to his attention that Disney owned a small stake in the House of Blues and suggested that Ovitz's use of a facility that was partly owned by Disney was a violation of company policy. Ovitz was flabbergasted. He didn't even know that Disney had an interest in the restaurant, and in any case, he'd paid the restaurant its usual charge.